Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Our Strange Skies podcast. I'm your host, Rob Christofferson, and I'm joined today by the man. How do you even introduce the man? He's an anomalous researcher. He's a lecturer. You've seen him on TV. If you've been on Twitter in the last decade, you've probably interacted with him. And he's like the weirdest guy that I interact with on you know, social media. John Tenney, welcome back, man.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here. Yeah, if you've been on Twitter for, you know, 10 plus years, at some point, I'm sure you've probably blocked me or muted me.
That's just the way of things. That's how it goes. It's the weirdness of John Tenney, and it comes out online, and the thing is, and what I love about interacting with you on Twitter is that generally, I'll throw some weird ass shit out there, and then you'll come and respond with weirder ass shit. So it's great. It's fantastic.
It's one of those things, right? Because I love the nonsense, quirkiness, and strangeness of all of this. And so I feel like a lot of people, they're like, oh, look, this guy's been doing this for 30 years. Like, let's talk to him about this weird stuff. And then when I reveal, which I don't hide, but when it is revealed to them that, like, oh, I definitely love the weirdest, craziest, nonsensical aspects of this, that's when people, I think, tend to start maybe muting and blocking me, which I feel is a loss on their end.
It is. It totally is, because it opens, if you're not open to this fantastic community of weird people that is on Twitter, it's just, you get all different facets of it, and it's just great, because, you know, you might get a weird ass ghost story, or you might just have a very strange synchronicity story that somebody has. It all connects into this great and sometimes really terrible place called Twitter.
Yeah. And, you know, I think too, there's a, when people start to become interested in high strangeness, UFOs, ghosts, cryptids, whatever form it may take, I feel like a lot of people start off where they have this idea that it's very serious in nature. It needs to be studied. It needs to be classified, categorized, quantified, and locked down. And when they see people who have a really decent sense of humor about it, or they think that they're treating it lightly, I think that's why a lot of people will end up blocking people who, like myself, who make jokes and are humorous most of the time, because they're like, why aren't you taking this serious? Why are you being such an asshole about this? And it's like, oh, I'm not. I've just come to recognize over 3 decades that what we're studying is very hilarious, and you should have a sense of humor about it. Because in a lot of cases, you find that having a sense of humor leads to a sense of open-mindedness.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a level of absurdity to these cases that in a way kind of lends credence to them, but it also just makes the situation, the account, like, that much more funny, which is, like, especially when you're reading reports and, like, there's just, like, an odd thing mentioned in them. Like, in one of the, in the main story for this episode that we'll be getting to, the first witness to it said something to the effect of, "This was a living person. It was not a puppet." It's like,
right.
Like, that's a big ass puppet. If you ask me that, but, yeah. So today we're getting into, something that John and I have debated on Twitter before. And that's why it's called the Catman Batman of Argentina, because I think at one point, both of us have shared the same sketch online on Twitter of the main figure. And it's just the pose that they're making is just absolutely ridiculous. It's,
yeah, the stretched out leg, the finger under the nose. It's great.
Yeah, it is. And, yeah, just, you know, the appearance of this figure, and in particular its ears, it definitely has a Batman kind of vibe to it, but you were quick to respond that no, it looks more like Catman.
Right. And then people forget there's a comic book called Catman that came out before Batman.
Right. Yeah, it's a forgotten piece of history that you know, people should revisit. Absolutely. So yeah, 1972, Argentina. It's things got very strange. Just going to the issues of Flying Saucer Review from back in that time period, there were a lot of accounts of people seeing UFOs, people encountering strange humanoids, and they were all kind of different. I talked about one on the Patreon a few weeks ago, the Bahia Blanca hitchhiker, which the sketch of this individual is fantastic because he's very human looking, except for his face is very long and it almost touches his chest. He just has a big, huge head. But
that has some lost time in it, right?
I think a tiny bit, not a lot, but just like maybe a few minutes in it. But it was interesting because the guy, he ultimately picks up this guy who's like basically stopping him in the middle of the road. And he's like, he looked pretty normal, except for his head. It was really big. And he brings him to this road, like further down the road. And he sees this, what he describes as a bus-like object, which it was just kind of long. It had windows on it. And it kind of fits into the first story that I have here. And just that he was terrified. He actually opened up his car door and he kind of like took refuge behind it. And this figure just gets out and apparently disappears. But in Argentina in 72, there were reports of what they called, like what witnesses kept calling train like objects. They were long, generally described as like 50 meters long, which is about 164 feet. They all had windows on them. One of the most baffling cases, it occurred on July 15th, 1972, and it involved two men, Attilio Brunelli, who was a 55-year-old composer. He performed in a band for many years, and he was a professor of music. Also, another individual named Severino Porchietto. He was a 61-year-old retired industrial worker. And on this particular night, they were guests of honor because of the band that they formed in their youth. They had traveled to a town named Balneária, which is they were from a big city called Córdoba, which is, I don't know if it's like the capital of Argentina, but it's one of the biggest cities in the country. Mm-hmm. they lived in Balnearia for many years. They both moved to Cordoba, which seems to be kind of significant here because they knew the roads very well. They traveled back like 4 or 5 times a year. And they drove in Porchietto's 1968 Ford Falcon that night. Just a classic car. They had attended a dinner with 1,500 attendees, and they took in several performances from many different orchestras. And at about 2:30 a.m. the next morning, they got back into their car and they set off for home. Porchietto, he makes a quick stop. He puts about 40 liters or about 10.5 gallons into the tank. And apparently his car could hold roughly, they said about 65 liters. So he had some, you know, he had a bit in the tank before leaving. When they got back on the road, it was just minutes after stopping at the service station. They passed the town of Arroyito, and both men were startled by this like incredibly bright flash of white light, which is not uncommon in a lot of UFO cases. And it was so bright that Brunelli said that he could see the entire countryside just light up. And glancing up from the windshield, Brunelli spotted this dark object that was kind of floating above the car. And given the banality that UFOs bring with it, he didn't really think anything of it. He just thought, maybe it's a storm cloud. But
sure.
That's an awfully low flying storm cloud right there, but they quickly dismissed it and they kept driving on. They also noticed that the skies were clear, the stars were out, and there was no storm approaching at all. So despite that, and believing a storm was on the way, they sped up. It was about 3:10 a.m. and they were 76 kilometers or 47 miles from Cordoba. And a short distance up the road, on the left-hand side of the road, they saw this long, rectangular stretch of lights. Again, about 50 meters long, 164 feet. And they definitely thought it was a train at first. They knew the area. They knew that trains passed up and down this way every single time. But on return trips, they noted that there were no tracks in this area, so it was just very weird. It was Brunelli who suggested that this object could be a UFO. And that's when Porchietto, he got nervous, and he just starts speeding off. Minutes after seeing this quote-unquote train, the Falcon approached a town they assumed to be Rio Primero, thinking that they had, like, bypassed two towns already on this trip. Only they didn't bypass two, they actually bypassed three. They approach the town of Monte Cristo, passing through and arriving home 20 minutes later. In later interviews, Brunelli noted how the ride was just kind of unusually smooth, which was odd because the roads were horrendous. And Porchietto at one point had the impression that the car was actually just kind of floating off the road a little bit. So we have some very weird stuff going on. And when Brunelli walked through his door, he noticed that it was 3:30 a.m. And the thing was, because they left at, 2:30, it was a 2-hour trip home. So they were about an hour early. And Brunelli gets the urge to just wake up his family and start talking about the wonderful time that he had at this dinner and everything like that. Doesn't mention the UFO at all. Doesn't say anything. It's just kind of like slipped from his mind. Porchietto, he lived about 15 minutes away from where Brunelli did. He arrived home, went to bed, woke up 4 hours later, just feeling completely refreshed. It's a pretty decent situation for him. And later, both men described themselves in a, quote, unwanted state of euphoria, which is the kind of experience I would want to have while seeing a UFO.
For sure.
Yeah. And
Do you know were they drive they were they driving a car or a truck?
It was a car. I looked up pictures of a Ford Falcon. It's like an average size car, pretty much, for back.
I'm just
in the
always
day.
One of the things that I wonder. It's a free floating idea that comes across in my brain every now and then. Is sometimes in UFO encounters, especially where there are encounters where there's interaction. Mm-hmm. How many times someone is driving a truck when it happens? I find that kind of aspect underexplored.
Mm. Interestingly enough, through these accounts, there is one truck that we'll get to later that specifically with Catman Batman, there was a truck involved in one of those cases. Also a motorcycle, which is interesting, you know?
Yeah, I think the case you were discussing earlier, too, the Bahia Blanca, mm-hmm. I think they were in a truck.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just something you find popping up over and over again. Like I said, like whether you want to believe Travis Walton, like he's in a truck, and Truman Bethlehem, like he's in a truck, and Woody Derenberger's in a truck, and like it just trucks and interactions, like I said, always seem to not be followed up on. I wonder what it has to do with trucks.
It's an interesting point, something I have never thought of before. What's interesting in particular about this sensation of the car being lifted up off the road, there was this, I guess it's an abduction case from South Africa that I covered on the Patreon, in which this guy and his, I think it was his girlfriend at the time, they were coming back from Zimbabwe. They lived in South Africa, so they were basically driving through the night. They have a couple of UFO encounters, and at one point, kind of in this quote-unquote unwanted state of, not necessarily euphoria, but fear mixed with apathy, they recalled how their car was floating over like swampland and stuff like that. It was the UFO had physically lifted their vehicle up, and it was like for many miles they were on this, like over this swampy land. So an interesting correlation there, because it's just like, what is it with UFOs taking control of cars like that sometimes?
Yeah. I think there's some, I might be wrong, but I think there's some car control, quote unquote, in Catman Batman too.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. So the next day, Porchietto's son was going to take the car, and he noticed that it still had half a tank in it. So he asked his father, did you fill up again before he came home? Because he did talk about how he filled up right before he left. He had only consumed about 2.5 liters or about 3.3 gallons of gas on a trip that was somewhere in the neighborhood of 118 kilometers or so. So we have, you know, I enjoy UFOs that can save you on your gas bill. I really do. It's fantastic.
They have good gas mileage. They get you around, too.
They really do.
They can pick you up in Arizona desert, fly around New York, take you to the moon and Mars and back, and, you know?
Yeah. It's just, I wish there was a taxi service. I really do. So Brunelli noticed he had some, like, physical sensations, and one was, quote, an itching sensation, which he located as being in the right lumbar dorsal region. He described the sensation as a sort of numbness, which, while growing more and more evident, was confined to a perfectly circular area, 1.5 centimeters or about a half inch in diameter. So that is interesting. Just like a perfect circle of numbness and itching.
Mm-hmm.
The circular area remained totally numb. After 2 minutes like that, he would again feel the itching sensation until the normal condition was restored. This would continue to recur about 4 or 5 times daily.
You know, it's a little other side note. As you're saying that, I often think about whenever I read cases that are possibly abduction cases, and the person involved will have one of these anomalous kind of numb spots on their body.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that when you go back and look through the literature of witchcraft trials, one of the ways that you discovered a witch was by poking the body with a sharp stick to find the spot of the body that was numb.
Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So all witches, they would have a special, and I mean, that goes all the way back to the European witch trials. The inquisitors would have a sharp poking instrument, whether it be a knife or an actual poker, and they would search the woman's body to find the spot that was numb.
Very interesting. Yeah, the similarities are there. Brunelli also apparently had a history of having blood pressure problems, but after having his encounter, his blood pressure could just kind of stabilize. He never had a problem with it again.
That's the kind of alien abduction I need. I tend to run a little high.
The occasional healing cases that you get with some UFO encounters are interesting, like that one Texas patrolman who had his alligator bite cured by a UFO, just like healed miraculously. That I always love that case because it's just like, you know, you're out on patrol, your pet alligator bit you, you know, earlier in the day, and UFOs got you taken care of. I appreciate that.
real universal health care.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Universal coming at you from the cosmos. You just gotta love it. Brunelli didn't mention anything about this train that he saw or the flash or anything for approximately 33 hours until one of his daughters who had spoken to Porchietto told her everything. So when she confronted him about this, it was just like kind of like the dam broke. The memories started coming back, and he just like let it all out.
This was in the 70s. This was the same year as Catman Batman.
Yeah, absolutely. Same. Yeah, it was Catman Batman September. This is July. So, yeah, it's a couple months beforehand.
Do you know that Argentinian case in 62 where the three truck drivers saw an illuminated railroad car that flew up out of, into the air?
No.
Yeah, that was 62, but I'm pretty sure it was in Argentina. And again, men in a truck, and they saw what they thought was a railroad car, and it the lights went out, and they saw kind of a red flame jet beneath it. And then it divided and flew off into different directions.
Oh, no kidding. That is interesting. Yeah, apparently there is a history here that, especially in 1972, there were multiple eyewitnesses that ended up seeing objects that were very similar to this one. So the first, and these folks, the Asia family, were actually traveling back from Brunei, headed to Cordoba. They left around the same time, maybe just a little bit later than Porchietto and Brunelli did. And there was about a party of five in this car. They had been traveling along for about 20 minutes. They had arrived at the town of Frontera, which is about 14 miles or 23 kilometers into the journey. And they witnessed the flash of intense bright light in the sky. And they thought that it was also a storm that was coming in the area. They, however, arrived home at about 4:15 a.m. So they didn't get the benefits of whatever, teleportation that this train offered. But there had been, in fact, a couple of other train object-like sightings earlier, and actually the same month. In July. So 2 weeks prior, Colonia Helaco Emilio Albert. He was the director of an industrial school, and he was with his family at his country home when he observed this enormously long train-like object that was emitting a blue-green set of lights, and it landed on a nearby mountain. Minutes later, it turned into a blinding white color, and it lifted up, and it kind of just looked like a giant fireball in the sky before it sped off. And on July 8th, so this is about a week before the other two gentlemen had their encounter, Carlos Altamirano was driving to Frias, accompanied by Aurora Bracamonte, and she was a secretary, and her sister Maria Angelico was with them. And they had left at around 11 p.m., and minutes later, they saw this fiery orb the size of a football. It dropped right in front of their car, and it just, like, exploded on the road. Hmm. And then 45 minutes later, near Colonia Achalco, the car came around this bend, and from about 800 meters or 2,600 feet away, they noticed an object on the ground that Carlos described as a, quote, train among the trees. So there was this kind of clearing and inside this group of trees, and there were these, just this large object that had these greenish door-sized windows in a straight line. And this object, they guesstimated, was about 50 meters or 164 feet long, and it was sitting on the ground. And Carlos was terrified, so he just quickly got out of there as fast as he could. And from there, you have the Bahia Blanca hitchhiker case. There are other cases that occur in the area, but this brings us to the Catman Batman. And this case I think the way that I described it to certain people is like, it's like if the Virginia incident had occurred around a Ford, manufacturing plant. That's the best way I can describe it, because it's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. We had in Michigan, we had a 1960s sighting of some little green men around a GM plant, but it was nothing like Catman Batman.
Catman Batman is it's a set of incidents that occurred over about the course of the week, and it occurs in a place called Santa Isabel, which is a neighborhood of Cordoba that there's a manufacturing, a car manufacturing plant. They produce kind of I think a bunch of different parts that are then shipped out to other processing plants and such. The first incident occurred on September 21st to a gentleman named Teodoro Merlot. He was 56 years old, and the plant in question is the Ica Renault plant. At the time, he was in charge of a washroom on this plant, and he had locked the doors at about 1:40 in the morning. And at around 5:40 a.m., he was headed to unlock the doors as the next shift was coming in. A lot of the maintenance workers and cleaners were coming in at around this time. So he headed over to the washrooms to put out some, soap and towels and turn on the lights and stuff. The building was completely empty at the time. He switched on the building's lights from the outside, and he proceeded in through one of the doors. He unlocked the first door, and he headed down a hallway to the first station to deliver some towels. And he noticed that the light in the station opposite to him had turned on, strangely enough. And that was when he noticed a figure bracing themselves against a wash basin. But he remained calm somehow. Just like, somebody's already in here. That's kind of weird. I locked this place up, but there's no reason to be alarmed. That apathy just, like,
it's so I will tell you, as a person who I was a custodian for a number of years when I was first starting in college, and so I had to lock up buildings and close them down and be the only ones there and reopen them. And from the descriptions that I've read, I mean, it really does seem like when they talk about him unlocking and locking up this washroom, like, it seems like there are probably shower stalls in there too.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like noticing, oh, someone got in here and might be taking a shower, like, that moment of it's okay this is still something that is playing out, feels somewhat normal to me. Like, there were times when I was locking up high school, a notoriously large high school that was actually my high school that I went to, and the way that the locker rooms were set up, there were times when no one was supposed to be in there, but because of other custodians and sometimes after school events, I would walk into what I thought was a completely isolated locked room, and I'd hear something, and I didn't immediately freak out because I was like, oh, well, someone else is in here.
That's fair. I would freak out, but that's just me. That's how I roll. I'm getting freaked out. I am probably throwing something. That's just how you handle things sometimes. So after delivering those towels and stuff, he continued on to the station where this figure was leaning. He had looked briefly into a mirror, and that's when the light in the area that he had previously been in suddenly went out. He heard a sound that was like metal striking glass. And in the other area where the light failed to turn on, it came on very brightly. And the figure that was in there was gone. It disappeared. They were nowhere to be found. Merlot quickly just kind of searched the area, and he couldn't find anybody, and it was mysterious because there was really no other way to get out unless he kind of pushed past him and went through the door that he had just unlocked, because the other one was locked. There was no way that they could have gotten out. They explained that the vents were the only way in through them was by there was like a special mechanism or something like that that operated them, but it just apparently, you know, tall ass David Blaine disappears in this bathroom. That's
again, I have just my personal experience working in big buildings. I can still see why he would have some concern, but mm-hmm. not be overly freaked out by it. In certain circumstances, in locations where I was doing overnights, I had been in, there was one elementary school I worked in for almost a year, and it was an old building. It had a ton of additions added onto it over time. And in the year that I worked there, I still don't think I ever found all of the kind of quote unquote hiding spots and corners and doors, even though I had locked that building up for a year. I was always surprised to find like, oh, this closet actually leads into an access room, or something that I had always imagined was just a washroom actually led to more interior rooms. So I can still kind of see why he's not fully freaking out that maybe someone got in or out or past me, or maybe there's another door somewhere that I just am not aware of.
All right. You know, John Tenney, nothing but an element of calm in a situation that is just terrifying.
Once you've died, you're pretty okay with a lot of weird stuff.
That's my new motto. Yes, I will adopt that, and I will start telling that to everybody. So where this episode gets its title is in the description of the being that Merlot encountered. Despite the fact that the immediate area where this figure was not completely lit, the mercury vapor lamps were casting enough light for him to see. And not only that, but this figure was just like, the gesture is hilarious. And we kind of mentioned it at the top, but just in the description, this was a very tall person. They were bracing themselves on a wash basin, and just judging by the posture of this figure, which I don't know, he could be a fencer, he could be a dancer, ballet dancer, or something like that. You know, he seemed to have some pretty good. I think he could flex very well.
Some good yoga skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think also, just to reveal, I mean, we're talking about someone who might be 8 feet tall.
Yes, absolutely. He had said somewhere around 2.4 to 2.5 meters, which is about 8 feet tall. So this is an incredibly tall figure. They were wearing, you know, form-fitting clothing, a dark blue one-piece outfit that left the hands and the head exposed. They had long, thin fingers on their hands. I think they had, you know, four fingers and a thumb, but it wasn't totally clear. Their head was very large and it curved toward the back. There was no hair. And their skin was, like, they described as plaster white. So just like kind of. Yeah, if you look at a piece of drywall, there you go. That's how like white their skin was.
Yeah,
the eyes and ears were kind of the most distinct feature. The ears were incredibly long. They actually they were pointy at the top and they kind of stretched most of the length of the head. And the being's eyes were large, too. And at first, underneath them, he thought there were some kind of marks, but he couldn't distinguish them because of the gesture that this figure was making, which it had bent its arm, its left arm or right arm. Yeah, its right arm. And it angled it up and it looked like it was smelling its finger.
It's making either a shushing motion or snipping its own finger.
Yeah, that's it's tough, you know, like, is he trying to be the ghost at the beginning of the Ghostbusters film? I don't know. Like, is this the new library? Is the bathroom the library? Could be. I don't know.
Yeah. I might be incorrect in this, but also, is the creature using standardized ASL sign language and saying that he is ugly? Because I think that's what you do to make the ugly face. You put your finger under your nose and pull it forward.
Yeah, that could very well be.
Or maybe his finger smells.
It could be like that could be the whole. All right. I think we've busted open this whole thing. He was in there to wash his hands or his finger. I don't know. One of those two things. That's the whole damn reason that he was in this washroom, is that they were there to wash their finger. And he was just kind of smelling it to make sure that, you know, maybe if he was going to greet this individual on wherever this person comes from, if they have a smelly finger, it's considered, you know, bad manners or something like that. I totally understand that. We're getting to the bottom of this, and I'm glad you're here, John, for this.
UFOnauts, like, we gotta pull over. My fingers just smell.
Yeah, just gotta give him a quick wash. Oh God, he locked up. That's okay. I'll get it in. No problem. So Merlot later noted how the room was actually warmer than it should be. And following the incident, he suffered from eye irritation, repeated headaches, back pain, as well as redness and burning and a burning sensation on his nose. So he was concerned by the incident, puzzled by the fact that somebody could have gotten in. He didn't report that, though, because he didn't want to get in trouble or anything like that, fearing that he didn't check the building before he locked it up, but he did make a sketch of this figure, and he headed for home at about 6:30 a.m. I don't know why I would have gone back to work other than, you know, you got to make a living, but he went back to work. He boarded the bus at 9:10 p.m. During the trip, in the mirror that was above the bus driver, he saw the face of the figure from the washroom reflected back at him, and I don't like this at all. I don't.
This is my favorite part of the story, is that hours later, in a bus full of people,
yes,
he sees the Catman Batman face reflected in the mirror.
Yeah, just like, why? Like, we have a psychic disturbance here. And judging by it, it seems like this being was trying to clear up some misconceptions that Merlot may have had about his facial features. That's what it seems like to me. It brings to mind the experience that Whitley Strieber claimed to have, in which he saw the alien head in his like brain or something like that. So it seems very like, hey, this is what my face looks like. So he sees the face in this mirror for about 3 minutes. before it just disappears. But the some of its facial features kind of becomes clear. He can now see that the upper lip of this being kind of protrudes beyond the lower one. There are some reddish brown patches on both cheeks, and below the eyes, there are these kind of two sharp converging lines. And the being, this is my favorite fact, the being apparently had eyebrows, but they looked painted on.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. The face vanishes, and he kind of just buries himself in his work. But he decides at 5 a.m.,
And just for anybody listening, too, he does turn around and look and make sure there's no one back there.
Yeah. He's like, oh, God, is this guy on the bus? And he does look around. There's nobody on the bus. There's just like some psychic head in a mirror, you know, just hanging out, clearing up misconceptions. I really don't know why. Is this whatever this being is, are they self-conscious about how they're going to be depicted in UFO magazines in the future? I don't know. Maybe.
Do they want to get the description right on the podcast with Rob and John?
Yeah, exactly. And if I get visited by a man that looks like this, I'm going to be pissed. But hopefully they don't visit me at my home, but maybe at work. I don't know. Maybe while on the walk to work tomorrow. It's going to be minus 18, so it'll make the trip that much faster. So he hands the sketch over to security personnel, and they kind of note it. They don't really do anything with it, but a few days later, while he was going into the pressing shop's washroom, he was with a colleague at the time. He immediately became terrified when the lights would not turn on. So the two of them kind of just swiftly walk away. They return to the building a couple hours later, and the lights turn on with no problem. Interestingly enough, Merlot noticed that his wristwatch and his alarm clock had stopped working at one point. But oddly, and this it occurred when he was home, his wall clock hadn't. So he came to the conclusion that because he had touched the his watch and his alarm clock with his hands, that he somehow made them stop.
Yeah, that he magnetized them in some way.
Yeah. But interestingly enough, the account does not end with Mr. Merlot. There was another individual, a 19-year-old man named Enrique Moreno, an administrative employee. He delivered documents to different buildings. And he drove a motorcycle to do it because this plant is rather large, you know, get around quickly and deliver these things. So he usually worked until about 11:30 at night distributing these documents and such. This incident occurs 6 days after Merlot's on September 27th. Moreno had just left the security office at about 10:30 p.m. And he's actually required to keep a diary, which he notes. And he was traveling to the engineering office to deliver blueprints. And because this was a quick delivery, he just chose to run in. He didn't turn on the lights or anything and just put down the blueprints on the table. Except when he was in there, the lights started to flicker on and off on their own without flipping switches here. So this happened for about 15 seconds, and then some rows would turn on and some would turn off. Like, this was very intermittent in the way that it was happening. Another thing that was very odd is that he could hear the hum of like a turbine, kind of
buzzing sound.
Yeah. But the problem was, is that there was no machinery running. So he didn't really know where it was coming from. And I feel for this man, because when I hear a hum and I don't know where it's coming from, I get scared. I get immediately freaked out because it's just like, I'm a worrier. So when something new comes into my perception and I don't immediately recognize it, I get a little scared. I get a little concerned, a little bit of anxiety.
You know, I was in bands for a long time, so I have pretty bad tinnitus from loud music. But Are you one of those people? I am. Like, if you walk into a house, you can tell if a TV is on because you can hear the electricity buzzing from the TV or the radio.
Yep. Yeah. Used to be a lot easier with the old tube TVs.
Yeah.
But I could definitely tell anytime I walked in a room. Moreno noted that the sound was kind of distinct. He had never really heard it before, but he was freaked out. He quickly got on his motorcycle and he drove to the stores department where he dropped off some documents there. It was now about 11:13 p.m., so it was getting close to quitting time. And Moreno's attention was taken by a, quote, sort of rainbow very near to the ground, far in the distance, kind of beyond the plant from his perspective. And I'll be posting in the show notes kind of the articles so you can see the diagrams that were drawn for this thing. And I'll post those online too, on social media and stuff. But like, it's not exactly clear where he sees this rainbow, but I'm assuming it's like, yeah, you know, they didn't even note it on the diagram because it was just So he just kind of tried to ignore that, retracing his route back to the security office rather quickly. But then another anomaly caught his attention. On the right side of the road, he could see a bluish green figure moving slowly, preparing to cross the road in front of him. At first, he thought it must have been kind of one of the workers just out there because he was in kind of a pile of car chassis, and like these were like lined up in like a long row, and they were actually set to be exported to Chile. But this individual was excessively tall, and Moreno noted that he said it was like he was standing on stilts in a way. Perhaps, it was a guy, he was like playing a prank on him. He was young. He was kind of new at the job. So, sometimes people do that, I guess. But when he was about 30 meters from this figure, about 98 feet away, they turned their entire body toward him. And he described their movements as like jerky and like almost like it was having difficulty turning a bit. And then that was when his motorcycle backfired and it started to shake uncontrollably in his speed. He started to slow down. The cycle just kind of lurched forward a little bit before it stopped completely adjacent to where this figure was. And similarly, he described this figure as 2.4 meters tall, or about 8 feet, with angular features, large ears. The description is pretty much nearly identical to Merlot's, except for a couple of differences. He described the eyes as like sparkling yellow, kind of like a light bulb. And he added a feature. There was this large silvery belt with this oval buckle, and on one side it looked like there was kind of a protrusion that was connected to it. So, space cowboy, I guess, I don't know.
And similarly too, wearing a full body suit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just pretty much every feature, like the sketches that are produced for this from all three men's recollections, they're pretty much exactly the same. I do like Moreno's because he's smiling. This figure is smiling, which is kind of nice. It kind of breaks the, fear a little bit, which I appreciate.
This one's herky jerky, like a broken robot.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And from the moment that he got close, Moreno started to experience this kind of loud humming in his ears, and he also felt an itching sensation through his body and a kind of paralysis. His mouth became dry, and he started to experience pain at the back of his neck. It just sounds like he's about to ask somebody out on a date. I mean,
a very tall, herky-jerky robot.
Yeah.
I've waited my whole life to ask you out to this prom. And now I'm having second thoughts. Seeing as you stopped my motorcycle, you can turn your body completely in robotic form and fashion, and you're a giant Batman. I'm now having second thoughts.
Yeah, completely. It was not love at first sight. But the area where the sighting took place was also excessively hot, and it was accompanied by the smell of burning oil. And this all seemed to cause Marino's eyes to burn a little bit. So, yeah, definitely that date is not going to happen now. And after about 45 seconds, the motorcycle kind of took off, made a left-hand turn on its own. He did not have control of it whatsoever. And the machine sped quickly before slowing a little bit. Marino said he couldn't recall whether he was like driving the rest of the way or if it was steering itself, but it was going pretty fast. It was a brisk like 50 kilometers per hour, about 31 miles an hour, on a in a place that he shouldn't be traveling that fast. And apparently on the last turn it almost tipped over completely. By the time that he arrived at the security office, the horn went off signaling the end of the shift. And what's interesting here is that Moreno's watch stopped at about 11:13, and he said that this encounter didn't last more than maybe 2 or 3 minutes. So there's a 17 minute time difference here,
right,
that we can't really account for. Did he stare at this figure for like,
yeah, it seems like he was paralyzed or didn't realize the passage of time. I don't think that there's actually, I mean, for him, there's lost time, but mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just interesting that it goes from that spot to another spot without him even noticing, you know, how long it's gone on.
Yeah. And there's another interesting feature here with the sighting of this individual. Where it had been standing, there were two rectangular footprints, about 20 centimeters or 7 inches by 40 centimeters or 15 inches. And they were embedded into the hot soil. And the soil was hotter than the soil around it. So it was embedded about 2 centimeters or 3/4 of an inch. And inside the depression in the ground were, quote, luminescent particles resembling mica, which is not really uncommon because there is a lot of mica in the area that they do note. Mm-hmm. So it's something. So this foot did it embedded in the ground. And despite the physical evidence, the security dismissed it because Moreno, he went right into the office. He's like, hey, you got to come back here. Some weird stuff has gone on. And they accused him of seeing things. Not only that, they went to the spot and they just kind of erased those footmarks.
So, yeah, they just rubbed them right out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Moreno kind of became the target of ridicule around the plant. Interestingly enough, his health just kind of started to take a nosedive right after that. And he was taken to the first aid room where his blood pressure dropped and he lost consciousness. Moreno was sent home via ambulance, and during the ride, he received a sedative, and in his state of semi-consciousness, a series of words and numbers repeated in his head. Words like coordinates, latitude, longitude, and the number 18.
That's actually one of my favorite parts, because I don't discuss it that often, but that's my magic number. That's why I love, one of the reasons I love this case.
And you know what's interesting is that I'm recording another episode on Friday, and there was I'm covering the Kelly Cahill, Australian mm-hmm. abduction. And she described at one point how, I think it was following her first abduction on the road, she was in a state where she was receiving information. So apparently this is just, you know, another step in the right direction or something. I don't know. But it's interesting. It keeps popping up for me here. So I will note that and assume I am on the right track. Awesome.
18 is a nice little signpost guide that people should be looking for.
Noted. I will note that. He was ultimately taken to his fiance's house where he was kind of delirious, and he kept repeating that he had seen a mechanical man. And the pale 19-year-old collapsed in a chair and fell asleep, though his sleep was fitful. And he kind of just like convulsed in the chair for a while before waking up and just going home. Like nothing had happened. He seemed fine, which is very odd. And yet, he also returns to work the next day and has another encounter with the Catman Batman.
Yep.
So on September 28th, he was picking up some tools from the teleprinting section when he had the impression that someone was watching him. And from a window, he could see the same figure he had seen the night before. The fluorescent lights flickered on and off, and a soft hum filled the room. And then the teleprinter started to fire up. Which, you know, this being is incredibly into labor. So, you know.
Doesn't want anybody to miss their job, that's for sure.
No, it's like a supervisor position here. Moreno, he runs to the security office and he asks them to come quickly, and they gripped him by the arm and told him to calm the hell down and that he was just doing this for attention seeking. But the sightings didn't end with Moreno. There's another individual, and he didn't even actually work at the plant. He made deliveries for another company. So on the same night that Moreno had his second sighting, Luftold Rodriguez, a 52-year-old truck driver, was delivering technical machinery to the plant. It was 3:40 a.m., and he was delivering...
There's that truck I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's right there. And he was delivering some sheet metal trimmings, which he was responsible for offloading. He was set to head back when he noticed that the whole area was lit up. On the right-hand side, he noticed that someone was approaching the truck from behind. That's creepy. We don't need that. He looked out and saw the side profile of a torso that belonged to a very tall individual. The being then stopped and did a right turn and looked directly at him. Moments later, he did another turn and marched off in a straight line.
And I'm pretty sure, too, in that account, when he turns his entire torso, head, arms, everything all at once.
Yes. Yes. It is a very uniform, like, military folks couldn't do this. Like, just, it was better executed this night than it had been the night before when he looked at, when he looked at Moreno. Yeah. So, Rodriguez's description is in line with Merlot's and Moreno's. This figure's wearing the belt. And the only difference here is that Rodriguez notices that the being is carrying this kind of like spherical object in its hands, in its right hand. This was kind of the first time that this being was seen walking.
Right.
He described the movements as stiff and rigid. This figure barely bent their knees, and when they put their foot down, they kind of slightly leaned in one direction. So this is a very poorly designed whatever this is. And, you know, that is what it is. You could probably improve on that. It's no Terminator, that's for sure.
It's like Terminator 1.
Yeah, yeah. We're not even to... we're a far cry from T-1000 here.
Right.
The engine of the truck stopped briefly and the streetlights went out, and he could hear a humming in his ears that was kind of like the sound of bees, he described it as. He felt immobilized and his truck seemed to vibrate, damaging a transistor radio in the process. When the entity had walked out of view, the truck started again and the streetlights came back. A stunned Rodriguez sat there until staff members asked why he hadn't picked up their new load. He explained what had happened, and an immediate search was conducted, but nobody was found.
I think it's interesting that they take his word for it.
Yeah.
More than the employee's words for it.
Do you think it's just like an age thing, you know, like 19 years? Yeah,
most definitely.
Yeah. The investigators of this case, Dr. Oscar Galindez, I'm kind of jealous because he's in a UFO group with his dad. They founded a UFO group. And, you know, that seems like cool as shit. You know, it's cool to have, you know, that parent that shares an interest that you can go hunt UFOs and talk to witnesses with. That's cool as shit. They ended up finding a number of eyewitnesses that had seen UFOs in the area and figures. A woman named Quiroga, she was a resident near Santa Isabel, claimed to see an object shaped like a crystal tube that had retrieved a human figure. Just like beamed them right up. That's pretty cool.
Love it.
Norberto Grosso, a resident of Barrio Colon, a suburb of Cordoba, was driving his car when his wife in the passenger seat saw a luminous object rising up from the Santa Isabel plant. So that's interesting. And many residents of Villa El Liberato, a suburb adjacent to Santa Isabel, saw luminous globes like ascending on multiple nights. So this is just like a batshit baller, cool ass, weird story.
I do love it. I mean, the fact that you have so many people reporting lights, that you have multiple witnesses describing, and I'm assuming, I don't know how deeply you've looked into Oscar Glendez's work, but I'm assuming that the plant didn't share the encounters like when they were reported mm-hmm. with other people at the plant. So the fact that you're getting descriptions from multiple people who haven't interacted with each other that are describing the same thing is super fascinating.
Yeah, because there definitely was this stigma around it, because this is their, you know, livelihoods. This is their jobs. They don't want to stir the pot or anything like that. So why would they necessarily, you know, want to report this stuff? They just kind right. of, and again, it gets back to the last time that you were on the show, John, and you talked about, you know, sometimes you got to go door to door. Sometimes you got to knock on those doors. Sometimes you're going to get those doors slammed in your face, but you won't know until you show up there.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, I was introduced to this case first when, this way back when, but I found a copy of this case reported in the UFO magazine Stendek. Mm-hmm. And it was in Spanish at the time, but they had the pictures of the creature. And this must be early 90s, late 80s, but I went to the community college because I knew the Spanish teacher over there. And I was like, can you translate this for me? And it was so funny because she was reading it and then translating it to me and not doing a great job, just kind of giving me an overview of the case. And it was so funny when I finally said, like, I need you to literally translate. Like, I remember this moment where I was like, I need you to literally translate this for me, not give me the high points. Because she would say things like, and it was tall and, you know, it was walking in that direction. And when she started to write things down, and instead of saying it was tall, saying like it's 8 feet tall, like that's where it started to become super interesting to me.
Are there any cases, just given, you know, how long you've been researching this stuff, and is there any cases that you could think of that are similar to this other than like, yeah, like Virginia, which, you know, may or may not be a hoax. I'm kind of on the fence with that. You know, I don't think the Brazilian military gave a particularly good explanation for it, but there are definitely some discrepancies and sensational aspects to it. But are there any other cases that you could think of that are similar to this other than like, you know, other individual aspects of the case, you know, like certain aspects? Because I'm kind of like blanking on this.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, I'm discovering this with the thing that I've been trying to put together, the book I've been trying to write on the Michigan, like, Forminaut sightings that I'm calling them. It's just, like, the weirder the incidents become, obviously, the less likely people are to talk about them. So to find cases that fit the specificity of, like, Catman, Batman is hard to do because people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to be pigeonholed as crazy or drunks or overly imaginative. So, I mean, I think one of the reasons that I like Catman Batman so much is because, you know, I don't think we're going to get more sightings of it, but we have kind of enough to start thinking that this is a really weird thing that actually did happen. That was a being experienced. What was happening, we obviously don't know. And then I find these weird little I don't know how my brain works when I'm putting information together, but this was probably, I don't know, 10 years ago, going through when I had 11 years when I moved into my new house and reorganizing my files. Like, I'm a big comic book guy, right? And so one of the things that I looked at was like, well, what's actually going on with Batman in 1972? Like, is there anything happening there? And there's really not, because I thought, like, well, maybe Batman had been on television. And so everybody had this idea of Batman in their head. And I could never really track down. I know, you know, the 1966 Batman show is probably being rerun somewhere in Argentina at the time. But I do remember stumbling across, talking to another comic book nerd friend of mine. He pointed out that I think it was in 71 or in 72 is when it was either Collegeville or, but 71 or 72 is when the kind of 1970s kids Batman costumes were released. The ones that came in a cardboard box with a kind of transparent front, and they had those plastic masks inside of them. And Scott, the person I was talking to at the time, had one, and he said, well, you know, these came out in 71 or 72. And when I was looking at the mask of Batman, I was like, this does look so much like Catman Batman. Like, it's amazing, but it just, there's, I mean, even the way that the nose is triangular in that costume. But what was super interesting to me was when I turned it around to put it on my face, and it immediately burst that it's bright white and it looks chalky and it looks like you were talking about, like drywall. And the way that in Catman Batman, the eyes are described as, you know, almond shaped, but horizontal, like not curved upwards, but elongated. And I was like, this, the inside of this Batman Catman Batman mask looks like Batman Catman exactly. Like, I can, I'll send you a picture. It's startling how much it actually fits the description. So then how does that tie into it? Like, was someone literally just on stilts in a body tight uniform wearing a child's Batman mask? That sounds crazier than an alien.
Yeah, absolutely. That is more sensational than the...
I mean, I really do think it's funny that, like, a skeptic or a debunker would be like, well, you know, obviously there was someone running around this plant in Argentina on stilts in a full body costume wearing a child's Batman mask. That's obviously an easier explanation. And I'm like, no, that's more fucked up than what probably happened.
That is like some, that's like serial killer shit right there. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah, this is like the beginning or of the kind of Ben Cooper era of costumes. So,
oh yeah. 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 It was Ben Cooper. Yep.
Yep. Because I remember having a couple of Ben Cooper costumes in the 80s when I was a kid.
I had a Darth Vader one.
I think I had a clown. I was a clown one year. And
I wasn't allowed to wear my Darth Vader Ben Cooper costume to school because it was considered too scary by the principal. I'll tell you about the 70s.
Wow, I guess so. Damn. I don't recall ever being scared by Star Wars, but, you know. I mean,
I think I was scared by some of the aliens in the bar when I first saw Star Wars, but yeah, I mean, when it comes to these types of cases, it is first of all amazing to me because there are, I mean, you pretty comprehensively talked about everything that happened, but just hitting those points of, like, you know, there was talked about, like, the demagneting or magnetization of watches and clocks, and the radio inside one of the trucks, you know, went off, and the motorcycle going off. So you've got all that great flying saucer UFO stuff of, you know, electromagnetic interference, and you've got people losing time or either being in a hypnotic state. You have that weird, almost psychical impression of seeing the face in the reflected mirror. And, you know, even the second time that the entity was seen while the lights were flickering on and off by who was the second?
Moreno.
Yeah, Moreno. Like, I think that he sees the face through the window the second time when he sees it outside. So, like, is that a reflection too? Was it actually behind him? And, you know, because he said he started feeling creepy when the lights were flashing. So, I mean, it's got all the great flying saucer stuff, and it honestly is just never going to be solved.
Nope. It's fucked up. That's the best way to describe it. It's
yeah, I mean, and Moreno, I don't even know if he's alive now. He'd be, you know, what, 69, almost 70 years old.
Yep. Yeah. It's just, like, again, it's the Varginha incident on a Ford plant. It's and it makes you wonder what the hell was it so interested in that it made multiple trips to this plant over the course of a week. And like, we don't even know if there are other witnesses that did see it that didn't report a damn thing. So it's curious, just because it kind of goes against the grain of, you know, most humanoid cases, with the exception of like Mothman. You don't normally see the same figure over and over again. Normally it's a one and done situation. So Catman Batman is unique for many different reasons. And it is,
it's one of those great, like, last waves of like the euphonauts or extraterrestrials, aliens, whatever you want to call them. Like, it's the last one of the last great cases where they're not complying to a little gray alien with a big head and black eyes. Like, this is an 8 foot tall Catman.
Yes. It is. It's got some really cool ears, and it'll fuck with your car. But, you know, that is the story of the Catman Batman. John, thank you for coming on the podcast and just, like, talking this weird shit. John, you've got a weekly podcast out now. You know, you've had...
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with paranormal.
Still, though.
Unless I get into rambling about it.
Still, though.
Yeah, it's called What's Up Weirdo. It's just me and my friend Jessica. We have a phone call once a week, and then we just release it, because I really do feel like with pandemic and quarantine, one of the things that I miss the most is going to bar or restaurant and just overhearing people's weird conversations. And so I thought, you know, let's just give people a weird conversation once a week they can put on in the background, and they can sound like their friends are over.
Yeah, and it's great. It's absolutely fantastic. If you have not listened to it yet, you'll just, like, find yourself laughing, you know, while you're out in public. It's great. So you should definitely go check out What's Up Weirdo. It's fantastic. John, where can people keep up with you on the internet and such?
I've tried to make it as easy as possible. So Twitter and Instagram is just John E. L. Tenney. The podcast is What's Up Weirdo. That's whatsupweirdo.com, available at all your podcast providers. And I usually just tell people, go to Google, type in my last name, T-E-N-N-E-Y, and then type weirdo after it, and follow whatever trail it leads you down.
Yeah, that is knowing John Tenney, is you're in for a ride no matter how you seek him out or how he comes into your peripheral vision and completely consumes your life. That's how it happens. That's just how it happens, folks. It's great. You're along for the ride now. So as for us, the Our Strange Skies podcast, you can find us on most podcasting apps. And if you'd like to help us out, you know, leaving ratings and reviews helps. If you want to leave ratings and reviews for What's Up Weirdo, you can do that too. You can do that on Spotify now. It's pretty great. You can share the show with a friend. Talking about it on social media is great. I love it. You guys make me cry when you do that. So please make me cry more. It's fantastic. If you want to support us monetarily, patreon.com/yourUFOguy. And for $3 a month, you get early access to this episode in particular. This thing's going to be out like 3 weeks before it hits the main feed. So if you want early episodes and bonus episodes, check that out. I have a bunch of other projects, The Order of Podcasters, Rolling Through the Realms. If you like TTRPGs, go check those out. And special thanks, as always, to our patrons for kind of making me less poor through podcasting. It's great. It's fantastic. Thanks to Floats for the use of their song UFO for the intro and outro to this program. Special thanks to Megan Lagerberg for our fantastic new logo, which is very Flying Saucer Review tribute. So it's fantastic. And to the great Desdemona, she does our t-shirt designs and she did our previous logo. And finally, don't forget to look up, because you never know what you'll find in Our Strange Skies or among the chassis at an Argentinian car manufacturing plant. In Gray, we trust.
Media.